All right, I'll call the meeting to order. Some people were concerned about getting out early for the football game, but it's Mr. O'Malley's position that since the Chicago Bears played yesterday that there are no professional football teams playing tonight. All right, he didn't really say that. I just wanted to get him in trouble. All right, we have a proclamation. Well, let's do the proclamation, and then we want to talk about scheduling things. So go ahead, Stephen, read that.
Proclamation October 2009, Solid Waste and Recycling Month, whereas dedicated nationally recognized county professionals help to minimize our county's impact on the environment by effectively managing waste through award-winning programs, and whereas the county solid waste programs in part include waste energy, a modern landfill, permanent household hazardous materials collection, asphalt shingle recycling, treatment of petroleum-impacted soils, and trailer home recycling. And whereas in addition to these programs, the county facilitates local and regional collaborative efforts in managing waste through shared recycling newsletters, mobile collection of household hazardous materials, access to the waste energy program, and solid waste planning. And whereas the county has shown its commitment to further enhancing solid waste and recycling efforts through sustainability practices, which are coordinated by the county's new sustainability coordinator. And whereas all residents have an ongoing responsibility to participate in sustainability through decreasing the amount of garbage that is produced in our homes, schools, communities, and workplace by practicing waste reduction, recycling, and buying recycled products. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of October 2009 as La Crosse County Solid Waste and Recycling Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to the welfare of La Crosse County residents.
Moved by Jay Johnson, seconded by Margaret Wood, and many other people, apparently. Discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Now I want to talk about scheduling items, and Steve, why don't you tell us what our options are?
The primary agenda item, obviously, tonight is the 2010 budget, but recognizing that something else is happening at 7:30, I looked ahead to the agenda for your county board meeting next Thursday. So far, we only have three resolutions and three zoning items coming out of governing committees this next week. The three zoning items are actually not controversial, so we will have quite a bit of time that we could add to that agenda for 2010 budget. So if people would prefer to meet as long as we need to tonight to make it through part of this presentation, we can carry most of the 2010 budget to next Thursday, since I assume you're all coming to the regular county board meeting, if that's all right.
What do people think about that? Sound all right? All right. That's for this month, but then the next policy planning meeting is future policy planning meeting is a similar problem, I understand.
Actually, December 7th, I don't know why, I don't think the Packers play on Monday night all that often, but the next time they play Monday night is December 7th, which is also our policy planning meeting. Now, they're not playing an NFC Central team, so maybe that's not as important, but... maybe it'll be more important because they'll be leading the division or something like that. So should we move the budget? Will be done by then. So are people concerned about the December 7th meeting, which also conflicts with a Packer game? It's some AFC.
We have two options that month. We could either move it to maybe Thursday of that week, or depending upon how quiet things are, perhaps cancel it altogether. Oh, okay, so that would be a problem. All right, let's talk about that in November. We'll see what things look like, but just to let you know that that's going to be an issue we're going to have to deal with. All right, let's go on then to the... actually, there are two things I want to mention. I need people for the Winding Rivers Library Board. I need a person for that, and I'd like that to be an out-county person. And... secondly, I'd like a person for the aviation board, and again, I'd like that for it to be an out-county person. So if people could talk to me after the board meeting, if anybody's interested in either of those, I need to do appointments for those next month. So Winding Rivers Library and aviation board. All right, now let's do the 2010 budget.
Mr. Chair, there's a...
Sharon Hampson.
If this is to replace...
Tom Rauch.
Okay. Brad was also on the Commission for Aging, and he needs to be...
So we need that one, too?
Yep.
Okay, and that could be in city or out county, either one. So we need three people. Thank you, Sharon. Okay.
Okay, as you notice on your agenda, there are several items that we have to talk about before we get into the major challenges, opportunities, and alternatives. It was requested that we give you an update on the women's community-based alternative under the concept of dealing with capital improvement plans. Obviously, it also deals with our long-term use of the new law enforcement center addition and the transition that's going on over there over time. So I asked Jane to come and give you an update on where we're at with the closure of the Northside facility and the beginning of usage of the facility here closer to downtown. Sorry we didn't include this in the packet, but again, there's no specific votes on this. Jane will give an update on how it's being utilized and the impact that it's having. A couple of us have had the opportunity to tour it, and I was impressed with the facility and the folks that are using it. So I'll just turn this over to Jane and let her give you an update on what's happening there.
Hi, I did give you a handout, which you can obviously all read. I didn't realize that it was Packer Viking Day today because I'm one of those people who does not care about football. So when I realized it was happening, I realized I didn't have to go through a lot of work to get ready for tonight. So it was kind of nice. Not to say I didn't put in, you know, enough time, but I'm ready for questions. So one of the things that when we worked with the city last year on getting the housing portion for the women's community-based program, we had made a promise that we would be out of those facilities by October, and we moved to the facility on the south side on September 9th and 10th. So that's completed. The women are moved in. The worst thing that's happened so far is they have seen a mouse, which has distressed them a little bit, but I'm sure that they have seen mice before, so they'll survive that. So that is finished, and it seems to have gone fairly successfully, so everyone's pretty happy about that. There was Bill Zollwig. He's a professor at the university. He did talk to the neighbors. I haven't seen this, but he did talk to the neighbors at the Kane Street neighborhood, and they were all fairly supportive at the time that we left, so we're feeling like that worked out in the end pretty positively, so that was good. So just a couple of things is that a little bit of a history for those who may or may not remember, who may not know or may not remember, is that providing specific community or programs specifically for women or gender-based program came out of the CARA report in 2007. And what they indicated is that with women and also people of color, you often need to develop certain kinds of program that's more specifically designed for that population. So what we did was we agreed, and the county board approved it, to develop the housing piece along with some of the community programming for the women, and that's what we've been doing. And I think it's really worked out nicely. There have been some things that have happened that we knew would happen. There has been periodic drug use at the house. Once in a while, people will come in that aren't supposed to be there. We always find out about it. Either the women test positive, or what happens more times than not, someone else tells on them. And so often, for example, there might be one of the social workers from Justice Sanctions who will go over there and have lunch, and she'll hear sort of the scoop about what's going on, so then she can take care of some things. And also, because we've contracted with the YWCA, those staff people are also wonderful, so the women who are at the house really have, I think, come to see that as a safe place, which is what we were really going for. Because if you remember, the women who are in that house are homeless. So right there, they have one strike against them, because otherwise they could be going home on electronic monitoring. And then they have all the other needs that we associate primarily with a lot of the people in the criminal justice system, but women especially, is that they often have children that they're dealing with. I think 9 of them have had children, while they not physically had children, but they are parents of minor children. Three women have been pregnant while they've been in the program. So we're dealing with a lot of different types of situations. So I think that they're really perceiving that place to be a safe place for them. A lot of mental health issues, a lot of substance abuse issues, just, again, what we had identified from the beginning. So we did contract with the YWCA, and there is a social worker in Justice Sanctions who's responsible for the women in that house along with other parts of her caseload, but she's responsible for the women. So it's basically the caseworker at the house that's a YW staff person, and then we also have a person who's assigned to it. Her name is Kate Holinka, and she's quite wonderful. 32 women have participated in the housing portion of the program. Two of them have been in there four times already. Two have been in three times, three have been in twice, and 25 have been in one time. And usually what happens is that they haven't been convicted of new crimes four times or three times or two times, but they may have a situation that they would go back into jail for a bit, the judge would let them back out again, we would try it again, and so that's primarily how those situations are going to happen. It's not necessarily a new crime as much as they got into some trouble while they were in and we tried again. Sometimes it works out beautifully, and sometimes it doesn't. There have been 41 discharges altogether. There have been 15 who have transitioned back to the community. 10 have gone back to jail. 12 absconded. We eventually find them. Three didn't participate, and one was put on a probation hold. Right now, today, there are four women. There are three more that we're talking about. A couple weeks ago, there were 10 women. It fluctuates quite a bit. So that's one of the things that it works out pretty nicely consistently, is that we almost always have some space, but once in a while we are full. That we saved about a little over 1,900 bed days since it started in on 9/2/08. There are the needs, again, that we've identified for the women, which we expected. Housing is obviously a big issue. We try to hook them up with housing in the community, so when they leave, we try to also connect them with Social Security or other kinds of benefits in the community also. And then today, or actually on 9/30, I wanted to give you also just an idea on the current women's jail, because some of that we don't have a lot of control over, and we look at that population every day, but once a week, Kate, again, the woman who works with the women in the house, she just looks to see who's in the jail and to see if there's anyone else that we can make an effort to try to talk to the judges about letting them out of jail. And on 9/30, there were six women in on a cash bond, two had drug court holds, meaning that the drug treatment court team had decided they needed to be in jail for some reason. Two had been unsuccessful in OWI court, and that means in La Crosse County, if you're unsuccessful in OWI court, you have to sit your jail time. There isn't an opportunity to get out, because many times the women who are in OWI treatment court are given opportunities to also use the resources at the Women's Community-Based Program, so we've tried everything we can. So when they've been unsuccessful in that, they're unsuccessful. There were three probation holds, and then the chemical health and justice sanctions revocations, those were last week or the week before, there was an incident at the house where two women used drugs while they were in the house, so they are in jail for a bit. And one isn't on a sentence, but we're looking at her. She's one of the women we're looking at to get out of jail. So that was who was in jail last Wednesday, I think the 30th was. So that's basically the overview of the program. I did want to tell you just a little bit about this. I believe that Supervisor Burke had talked to you about the transition from jail to community initiative, and that the Urban Institute and the National Institute of Corrections, their site visit is scheduled for November 9th through November 11th, and there may be some opportunity if anyone is interested in meeting with them. And then also, we had talked to you in the past about a recognition event for justice sanctions, and we've changed that date to October 27th. It is going to be at Western's Lunda Center, and it's shaping up pretty nicely, so we're pretty excited about that. So that's all I have for you, unless you have questions for me.
I have a couple things. I talked recently to Tom Fitzpatrick, whose law firm is right next door, and he was very pleased with the way things are going.
Good.
Seemed very satisfied. Question I have for you, Jane. Are we using both sides of the house at this point, or just one right now?
We have both sides, obviously, and so I don't know if they have the women separated in both sides or if they're all in one side, because, again, they don't move the women when the when the census goes down. They tend to keep them in the rooms they're in, so they're not moving, so we use both sides most of the time.
Okay, sounds good. Questions for Jane? Don Meyer.
Jane, just quickly, probation hold, what is that, where someone is violated or what?
Someone's on probation and they've done something that their agent wants them to be incarcerated for a period of time. So it might be a day, it might be a week, it might be longer than that, depending on what happens. There are usually quite a few probation holds in the jail. Most of them are men. But
Sharon.
Thank you. Have there been any surprises, things you didn't anticipate, things you were...
Besides the mouse?
Yes, besides the mouse. No, actually, we anticipated that because we saw some evidence of mice before we moved in. No, the behaviors that are happening are what we expected. I didn't expect the women to be violent. I didn't expect the women to hurt people. I expected them to have the behaviors that they have when they're in the community. I mean, this is what our entire population does, is either drug use or alcohol use, or they're around people they shouldn't be around. The difference, obviously, we have a little bit more knowledge about who's in the house. because there are so many other eyes and ears and cameras and all of those things. So it's what we expected.
Anybody else? Ray Ebert.
Thank you, sir. The 32 women, 2-4 times, 2-3 times, is that a judge that decides that, or do you decide to put them back?
It's a combination. If we think it's someone that we want to, we consider, we've made some inroads, we may ask a judge to release them back to us again, but in the end, it's a judge's decision all the time.
Okay. Also, do you see, it looks like it's, you know, certainly mixed. 15 people apparently have made it through the program?
Yes.
Out of 41?
Out of 41, yes. It's the discharges, so some of them were repeated. Obviously, two had four times.
Do you see the new house maybe helping this more because of its location, or is there an advantage of the new house other than not the neighbors, or will they get better supervision since they're closer to the police departments or anything?
I would have to check with the city police to see if they believe that. That's something that, you know, they know where it is. The reasons that the women have failed so often is it's not a matter of supervision. It's a matter of their lives and their lifestyles. And you know, I've tried to say this about this population. This is probably one of the most complicated populations that we work with, and that they have a lot of different kinds of needs. And just by the fact that they are homeless is a huge issue. And then you compound that with all the other substance abusing, mental health, you know, they're worried about their kids, they're pregnant, they don't have a job. It's a very complicated group of people. And so it's not the supervision that is going to change their behavior in the long run. It's going to be how do we connect them with different providers in the community, which is why we made this a community-based program, so that they can make those connections and do better. And I never believed that it would be sort of one time through the house and they would be ready to go. This is really and truly a very complicated population. And I would just, if anyone is ever interested in sitting down with them, I would be more than happy to set that up and so you can meet some of the women. They are truly wonderful to work with, but they are a challenge, and they would be the first ones to say that.
Now, are they free to come and go as they wish?
Nope, they're all on electronic monitoring, so they have to submit a schedule about where they're going to go, and it has to be approved by the social worker.
Okay, yeah, and I'd like to take you up on the go over that. I think it'd be interesting. Thank you.
Anybody else? Any questions? Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the report. I just have a quick question. I know one of the issues that came up when we were discussing the community-based program was safety and security. And I know you've been working really hard to make sure we have a safe and secure home for these women who need, like you said, very complicated life circumstance, and they really need the support. I guess I'm concerned a little bit about the use of drugs in the building, because you know, that's obviously hurting not only them but the other women that are there. And I guess my questions deal with my first question is, how are you monitoring the people that go in and out of the building? And because you mentioned there's some people that weren't supposed to be there that were there. And I'm really concerned about safety and security, number one, because we can't help the people there unless we have a safe and secure building.
Right. I think, you know, for me, that is also one of the most important things, is that for the women who are in there, I do not want them to believe that they are not safe there. I think that is probably one of the things. We have a few very, very strict rules, and one of them is they absolutely can't have visitors that aren't approved. And we said right from the beginning, no men. So if we ever, and there are cameras, so that's how we know if men are in there. Plus, as I said, the women tell on each other. I mean, it's almost too easy sometimes. I mean, it's wonderful, but they do. The way we found out the two women were using at the house was that we got, I think, a couple phone calls at Justice Sanctions, and also they told the social worker at the house that two women were there using drugs. So all we had to do was ask them, and they both acknowledged it. And if not, then we were going to test them both. So we knew that, and both of them are in jail right now. So, you know, the other women see that. And by the way, that was a day that we had, I think, 8 or 9 women in the house. So there were 7 that did not use, which we were, I think was, again, that may not seem impressive, but that was really impressive to us, was that there were 7 who didn't use. And again, I know that just sort of tells you where I've worked, but I think it's really interesting to know that that is impressive, that there were, we got reports and that 7 did not use. And so that's a huge issue for us, is that we want the women to know they're safe. And so I think that's why we have some really, like I said, hard and fast rules about some things, and those are 2 of them. Because that to me is crucial, and if we don't have that, then we sort of have chaos. And so we work very hard on that, and I think the women do too.
How? Thank you. How do you know? You mentioned you're relying on other women in the home for information. I mean, you surely have other means of getting information.
We have cameras.
You have cameras inside, yeah, and outside the building.
The cameras are outside.
Okay, so so how often do you monitor the cameras in terms of who's coming in and out, or? You know, I'm assuming that people using drugs were the women that were in the program and not outside people,
right,
from the community? Okay.
They had done what many people do, just as an example, in this specific situation, is they had made a contact with someone on the outside. They met somebody on their way to or from someplace, got the drugs, and took it back to the house. And that's very common. The cameras are monitored by the Y staff, and so they're motion detected. So they look at them. I haven't actually talked to them since we moved into the new house to know for sure, but they monitor those pretty regularly.
Like,
I think they look at them daily, is the last I had heard, but I'll check again on that. Was that
okay? Yeah, I'd like more information on that in terms of how often they're being monitored, who's coming in and out, and then obviously there's staff there some parts of the day, but we're talking like the late hours and,
sure,
early hours of the morning probably.
Yep. We also have, there are a lot of providers that go in during the evening, so there are a number of evenings that there are providers in the house too, which is also nice.
Okay, are there any other concerns that you, along the lines of outside visitors or drug use that came up?
Those are the 2 big ones. I mean, you know, otherwise they do what everybody else, not everybody, but periodically with the, if we have violations on justice sanctions, it's going to be they go out, they don't maintain their schedule. They leave when they shouldn't. Sometimes people have reasons for that, sometimes they don't. So depending on what the situation is, we take the same action we would take for someone who else is on electronic monitoring. So it would be the same sort of situation. So other than that, I have to say there haven't been any sorts of situations that, you know, there have been some unusual situations, but nothing that, I'm trying to think of what the most recent one that was sort of difficult. But, And again, you know, once they're a couple weeks old, I don't remember them as well. So there haven't really been anything recently that I would be concerned about.
Thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. It sounds like you're got everything under control.
As much as I have anything under control. I don't think I have much control over anything, by the way. So.
No, you said that, that there's cameras monitoring these people. And are they free to go and come from that house at,
nope,
any time they want?
Nope, they're all on electronic monitoring, so they have to have a schedule about when they can leave and when they come back, and they have to submit that, and it has to be approved by the social worker.
And then if they would violate anything, you know, with all your protocol and everything, how long is the time between that's reported?
It would be reported, you know, the next working day by the social worker to the court. So when the next day the social worker comes in, that person would then take that and transfer that information to the judge.
Okay. Are they required to open their doors for somebody that comes in to search for drug paraphernalia or something, some of your people or social workers? How does that work?
Staff at Justice Sanctions can go in at any time. Along with the, obviously, the YW staff can go in at any time. And other than that, I would be open to law enforcement going in. We would just, I think we've had this discussion, the district attorney and I had this discussion, and he agreed that it would be best if law enforcement believed that they needed to go in to look for drugs, they should contact us first and just as a courtesy let us know that they needed to do that. And that seems reasonable to me. They haven't asked us that, but...
Yeah, thank you.
Ralph?
Expanding on Mr. Burns' question, he about the drug usage in the house, I thought it would be probably more common to be used outside the house. And then you would have to catch it on one of your, tests or whatever you do? And
yes.
Then if you catch it that way, what happens then? They go back to jail, did you say? Or
in that situation, it would depend on the judge. Again, we make reports on all violations to the court. There are times where we recommend they go to jail. There are times we recommend a sanction. There are times we recommend nothing. So it would depend, and the judge can always override us, which they do often. So what we do is we suggest that what we think is appropriate as a response, and the judge can override that, and that's fine. So if there is someone who has used drugs, but again, if we believe that that progress is being made, we may not recommend that she go back to jail, but the judge may say that she has to go back to jail anyway, and so then she goes to jail.
On that example, you said they told on the ones that you were using in the house, did you recommend they go back to jail, or did the judge do that?
On those two cases, we recommended they go to jail.
Because they were with the other other women in the house.
Right.
Anybody else? All right. Thank you, Jane. Oops. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Quick question, Jane. How often do you meet with the director of the YMCA who's responsible for overseeing this program?
It's the YW, and we have monthly
YWCA.
Meetings. Yeah, sorry, it's one of those little things. That's okay.
I misspoke.
It's all right. We all do that. I believe I called you John earlier. I get you and your brother mixed up sometimes. So, what happens is that we have quarterly policy meetings where I meet and Mary Kay Wolf, who's the director of the YW, and staff meet. And then the supervisors meet monthly, and then the staff people who work with the women every day, they talk every day. And they meet with the women. I think the women, they also have weekly meetings with each of the women, too. So they have pretty regular hands-on kinds of meetings with the women. Thank you.
Okay. Again, Jane, thank you very much. Very informative.
Just as a final word with that, Jane kind of underplayed the event a little bit. I'd like to reemphasize for board members, Tuesday, October 27th, if you haven't marked it in your calendar yet, this is the first time in 11 years that we've done anything to recognize the successful people that have come through our program and the work of everybody from employers to our staff, really working with people to turn their lives around. The successful goal, of course, is that people change their lives and don't come back and reoffend. And we believe that in 11 years, as the Urban Institute is recognized and other people nationally, we've got a great success story here. If you're available, please come Tuesday, October 27th. It's $5 a person. We've got a famous local band that's going to be playing called The Rex that have a couple of dignitaries, that one from our county board, one from our judiciary, that will be playing music there. It's going to be a good time, and I think it's important. You know, it seems that all we ever see about people coming in contact with the system are the headline stories about people reoffending or the headlines about people going to jail. We rarely give a chance to recognize the work that our staff is doing and that these people are doing to change their lives around. So if you can make it, it's just across the street at the new Lunda Center, Tuesday, October 27th. It's only $5. We're hoping that all the proceeds will go to offset the cost of the event, a very low-cost event, but please try to make some time. A lot of times, this is the only time these folks have ever been recognized for doing something successful in their life. So please come by, meet our clients, meet the people that you're serving through the work that we're doing in Justice Sanctions. Again, Tuesday, October 27th. I know Jane was reluctant to promote that as much as I just did, but please try to take the time and come over and do that. It's at 6 o'clock.
6 to 8.
6 to 8. It's going to be a short event. It's not going to be real long, enough time to eat, listen to some music, and interact with some folks that are making a difference in their lives and our community.
Sounds good. Jeff.
Yeah, we'll be putting out notices as well and working on it. We had some struggle getting the exact time and everything, but it's at the end of this month.
Okay. Now, LEC Edition project status and update.
Right. I thought, and as Jim is coming forward, I thought it'd be important, not all members of the LEC committee were able to tour the facility and as it's going, and obviously this is one of the biggest decisions you as a body have made and will continue to make as we finalize this, and I thought it'd be important for you to get up to date on the progress we're making with the law enforcement center. We also will schedule a tour later on in coming months if people want to see a physical tour of that. A number of us have already done that, but Jim, go ahead.
Okay. Steve said he asked me to give you a brief update on the schedule and progress, so I'm going to try to make it quick, but show you some highlights, see if I can make this thing go here. There we go. This is where we started on November 3rd of last year. I think you recognize a few people there. Some
I
of
like
you haven't seen
glasses.
This yet, so.
The dark glasses are nice.
The dark glasses, you like that? And this is where we are today, looking at kind of the same view. Things are going fairly well. We're looking at enclosing. Windows are supposed to be arriving the week of the 19th. So windows will start going in. Just a few notes of what's been going on over there. This is a picture of the 12,000-gallon propane tank that has been buried, and this is for interruptible gas. If something happens to XL or they tell us to curtail, we can run on propane as backup. This is the bottom half of an 8,000-gallon grease trap. That's going to be buried in the parking lot. Just to give you a size of it, you can see the guy standing on it. And there's the whole thing. this is a picture looking, and it's really hard to see here, but looking out towards that big opening on the west side of the building, which are the big windows in the rec rooms of the housing pods up there. And you can see all the construction going on. This is looking the other direction at the day room and some cells. And this is actually looking into a cell. You can see the windows in the back of the cell that go to the chase, and then there's exterior windows from there. There's going to be a window in the door and also a side light window in the side of the cell here. And the bunk would be right inside this window here. Air handling equipment is all on site now, being installed. This is first floor air handling room. You can see some big stuff is starting to come in now. This is looking down the hallway on first floor by probation and parole. Most of that build-out has been done. We've had a little setback upstairs on second floor, so all the contractors have been concentrating on the lower floors until we get enclosed up above. And finally, hopefully the completion of the schedule, and hopefully we stick with this. Phase one, which is the direct supervision pods on second floor, the booking area and kitchen area on the ground floor, we're hoping to be completed around the 15th of March, so the jail staff can start occupying that part of the building. At that point, then, we'll close the front entry of the building where the existing Sally Port. They actually drive underneath the new building now to get to the old building. That should be finished around the end of July. The existing housing renovation up on second floor of the existing building, we're hoping to have done in the middle of August. And then final completion of the existing receiving and medical area on ground floor around February of 2011.
Jim, when you say staff start occupying around March 15th, the prisoners at the same time, or they come later?
There will be about a two-week shakedown where jail staff will shake the system down, and that'll happen between the second, third week of February, or March, I should say. And then questions on that portion of...
Questions, anybody? Jim, if people are interested in doing a tour...
Probably the easiest thing is to do is just give me a call.
Okay.
And I can do it one-on-one or... couple, two, three at a time. I'd rather take you in small groups than large groups. Can spend a little more time with you and keep everyone together.
Okay. So
just give my office a call.
The schedule you gave, and that's the updated, because I know we're a touch behind that.
That is the
same
updated
thing that we got briefed on.
As of Friday.
Thank you, sir.
We're about 6 to 8 weeks behind schedule right now.
Any other questions? Okay.
The next item we actually discussed quite a bit at Public Works Committee. They came to a broad consensus that they didn't agree on what the right steps were to take with the administrative garage floor. But we thought rather than just bring you a resolution that doesn't hit the mark, as we've done before on this issue, we thought we'd bring you an update on phase one and what we accomplished in that so far. We're also bringing this to Executive Committee on Wednesday, and to get some direction from Public Works Committee, the full board, and Executive Committee on what to do with that. So Jim is going to give us a more detailed overview. Members of the Public Works Committee, you didn't see a lot of these details. But it'll give you an idea on where we're at with the garage floor.
Okay. Phase one entailed taking the ceiling out in the basement of where printing used to be and the garage used to be, asbestos work, electrical work, and ceiling demolition. This is a view of the bottom of that floor now. We can actually see it from standing at the floor level instead of through a trapdoor. There is about three spots that are pretty close to this, and there's about three others that are just like that, but the concrete is sagging, so you can't see the rebar at this point. The area that we're talking about, just to refresh everyone's memory, is this area here. This is the south entrance here, and Steve said, coming in the south here, and then there's two garage doors from the outside here. So it's about a sixth of the far south end of the building that we're talking about. This picture here shows the area that the concrete has actually dilapidated from the structure. So it's a pretty sizable chunk, and what I showed you before was this square right here coming out to the hallway. We've remediated the asbestos out of this portion here. We have not done anything over here or over in this area at this time. So that's what phase one took care of, and that was about 70,000 of the 115.
Jim, what did you do in the new building differently so we don't have to deal with this again?
We don't have asbestos in it, but that's
what kind of protection?
Protection. As far as the
concrete?
We don't have anything underneath the garage floor. It's earth, so that's a huge factor. So we get into where we are today. We had an analysis done of the floor, as you saw some of the pictures there. And this is what came out of that analysis. I told them to give me two options. I figured two was enough at this time, but if you direct something else, we can do that. The first option is, my original thought was to shore it up. So what we would have to do to that is additional asbestos abatement in the basement, because we didn't go far enough. Relocate the computer room, which serves this building, because they can't remediate over the top of the computer room and keep it functioning. They would go in then and add additional steam beams and columns, along with pads to support the additional beams. Reapply spray-on fireproofing on the beams, and that's got an estimated cost of $220,000. Now, there's a lot more detail that goes into this, but these were the highlights that I pulled out of the report. So that would be option one. Option two would be entire floor replacement, additional asbestos abatement in the basement again, relocate the computer room. But we would also have to do asbestos abatement on the first floor, because now not only are we taking the floor out, but we're taking two interior walls out that go to the structure, and an outside wall has to come out because the slab actually goes underneath that wall. Remove and reinstall block walls on first floor for the slab replacement, and then reapply fireproofing on the beams, and that's got an estimated cost of $355,000. I promise to keep it short, so I'll answer any questions.
Marilyn.
With option one, that space is not going to be utilized?
The space, according to the report, can be utilized for up to 4 to 5 years. That's what their recommendation
option
is.
Option two would be full utilization.
It would be a permanent replacement of the floor.
Sharon?
Thank you. How much did it cost to get us that study that came up with option one and option two?
About $20,000.
Okay, so
to do the upfront work to get us to the first phase, and then the report is another $9,000.
Yeah.
So okay. $20,000 total to get to where we are today.
Okay, so that's $20,000. Mm-hmm. What was your original estimation to us to shore it up? Do you remember?
It was under two. It was up to $200,000.
$200,000.
Yeah, less
okay.
than $200,000 total.
All right. Thank you.
Anybody else? Ralph.
Okay. Did you say option two encompasses more a bigger area? We're taking out more asbestos.
We're taking out more in the basement, and we're taking all of it out on first floor, above the ceiling.
Okay, so that's one of the major costings, and then that space, basement and first floor, for any county department is usable for probably the length of the building then.
If we replace the slab, yes.
If we replace the slab.
Yep.
If you went the other route and move some county department in there and then decide to fix it permanently later on, we got to move them back out,
that would
tear
be
it back up, and then move them back in.
That would be correct.
Any other questions? So, Steve, how much money do we have in the budget for this?
We don't.
That's what I thought.
So part of the discussion, or part of what we wanted to bring here, and we can leave it to the Executive Committee and Public Works Committee to wrestle with, but recognize that when this came up before, there was not complete consensus by this body, and we thought, again, in respect to both the Governing Committee, Public Works and Infrastructure, which supervises facilities, along with myself, to the full board, also to exec, is to get some direction, and we can wait till Executive Committee and come back with a recommendation. Staff does recommend, again, option one, but we decided not to put together a resolution because we'd rather take clear direction from this body. So I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you want more discussion by the board or let Executive Committee wrestle with it on Wednesday and see what happens. But we spent, Chuck, probably about 15-20 minutes at Public Works and came to a complete lack of consensus by that body. So I'm looking for your direction, Mr. Chair.
Audrey.
Thank you. Is there a long-term plan in relation to this building?
We had talked about that a while ago, in general, the campus mm-hmm. plan, but then with the renovation or the addition on the law enforcement center, there's just no money at this point, so that's been on hiatus for a while and likely be on hiatus for a while longer.
And if my understanding is correct, there are significant asbestos problems with the total building.
I wouldn't say significant. There are some spots that have been remediated, but there are still some here and there.
I would say they're significant.
Okay, well, they're significant. Well, and I mean, and beyond the asbestos, yeah. Then there's other issues too, like the roof.
The roof, we have plumbing issues, lack of electrical. I could go on and on, but there's a lot of infrastructure that we need to deal with.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because, you know, on the one hand, it would seem a better investment to go the whole hog and do the $300,000 job, but if you have, if there is more work that needs to be done in the building, then the piecemeal might be a more responsible way of going at it.
What would people think if we bring this back, let the committees talk about it a little bit, see if they can flesh out some further information and kind of take advantage of their thought process, since we've got other things on the agenda yet tonight. Don?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to see if you come back with a plan. We did clear the judges' chambers upstairs prior to them moving to the other building. So part of the building is clean. I'd like to see something in a schematic showing what's clean and what isn't.
That I can
and,
do.
And maybe what was the cost figure on cleaning it up in the first place. And that was expensive years ago when he took the asbestos out of the judges' chambers up there. I know, but I don't remember what it was. So,
Ralph?
Well, I mean, if we don't have any plan on the horizon for building a new building in 4 or 5 years, I don't see why we wouldn't be doing the option two, because it's permanent space. that county departments will be using. And what I'm hearing here, we've got no plans, imminent plans, to be replacing this building in 4 or 5 years. Like I said, in the building, when they build these buildings, the architects, when they put in steel beams and concrete and terrazzo floors, they tell us they'll last for 100 years. And as soon as the government occupies them, they're good for 40. But I know no private business with a building of this magnitude would even be wouldn't even be on their radar screen to replace it.
Anybody else? All right, we'll bring this back. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Highway road projects.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, included in your agenda packet, and I don't usually do this, but I've included the PowerPoint slides just as an initial step to talk about other alternatives with the county administrator's budget recommendation. In essence, what I've done is I've given you an entire county budget that, if you adopt with whatever changes you choose to make, is a balanced budget and provides ongoing service needs for our community, but presents some challenges for 2011 and beyond. One of those key areas is in our county road system, and I talked briefly at our last meeting about all of the challenges with funding. We're going to spend some time with that later on tonight or at your next meeting, and also through the Public Works Committee review and everyone else's review of this budget. But what I wanted us to target before we get into the choices and options and alternatives that you have, I wanted to spend a little bit of time and ask Denny to talk about and Keith to talk about what's actually happening with our road system. Recognize that we've done two separate road studies, but the slide that I wanted to zero in on before I just turn it over to Denny and to give you some more anecdotal information, this is the historical background of the last 10 years from 1999 through 2008 of what we've actually spent on our road system. Recall that the first road study talked about that, in essence, we're doing a pretty good job of just keeping up with road maintenance. Now, all that meant is that based on an inflation-adjusted number, we were averaging about $1.7 million per year, not adjusting for inflation, excuse me, that adjusted for inflation, that just to maintain with that existing level, you need to spend in this calendar year about $2.1 million, or you're losing ground with just basic maintenance. And that first road study, which was early in my tenure, basically brought in outside engineering help to take a look at what our staff are doing and recognize that our guys are doing a pretty good job. Under Denny's direction and Keith's direction, our staff is doing a very good job of keeping up to date with just maintaining existing roads if we can provide funding to them of $2.1 million. What the second road study identified, though, was that the amount of sprawl that we have happening in our county, the amount of development where developers and increased demand on road systems aren't keeping up with the increased traffic counts, the increased maintenance needs on the roads because of that traffic count, safety needs like turn lanes, intersection improvements, frontage roads, all those types of things identified well over $20 million of additional road needs that are not addressed our existing road system, even if we can maintain at $2.1 million per year. Also recognize, just to remind you, that at the end of this 2010 budget, as presented to you, we do not have ongoing funding sources that can maintain the level of just maintenance at 2.1, let alone getting to address any of the unmet road needs that was in the second study. So rather than have me dominate the discussion at this point, I just wanted to point that out to you and also reference the details that are there. And then I've asked Denny to just talk about some of the real, at the ground level, what's happening with roads and a lot of the demands, because while you get a nice capital improvement sheet, and hopefully some of you have had a chance to look at that, you'll see the road projects that we're able to do at the 2.1, but that entire list that's off to the right-hand side of unfunded identifies those road systems that we know we're not able to get to right now that were identified by that road study, as well as your constituents and our citizens are looking at the types of impacts to road systems right now. So I'll just ask Denny to give you some more background on this.
this pointer work on this thing or just the computer? Okay, thank you, Steve, and pretty good start of the discussion, and I want to emphasize Steve talked about maintenance. The money that we've been spending the last few years, we are doing just what you call maintenance. We're just trying to keep up, and that's not improving things that should be done out there. County's growing every day. Urban areas are moving out. Our intersections are becoming less efficient, dangerous. People are wanting better facilities as far as bike riding and things like that. So right now our county system isn't supporting that at the level it's been funded. I don't know if you have the CIP list in front of you here, but
page 3 of your budget book, if you go back to the goldenrod, actually provides that detail that we keep it updating.
You're probably not going to be able to see that map very well, but if you start at the top of the list, Greenwood, or B16 to the Greenwood area, there's a stretch of road in the middle of two projects that were done back in the mid-90s. That road is totally shot. You can't hardly drive on it. I put in for some federal money. It is in the program, but down the road, it's not coming through. Everybody seems to be in the same shape we are. So if we would get that, about 80% of that would be covered by federal and state grants. But it's often the unfunded because it's out in the horizon. Nobody knows where the money's coming from. We are contributing to the County Trunk S project. Right in this area here, it's just up in, if you know where the Menards area is, the city of Onalaska's got a project going there. They're going to widen that from where Menards and, what's the name of the street? Riders Club Road comes through there. They're going to widen that to the north to where County Trunk S turns and goes up to the ridge. So we're going to contribute in $150,000 towards that project. There will be a roundabout put in there at Riders Club Road in SN. So that'll be the first one in the area, but we thought the design of that would last for the projected traffic up there longer than signals. Once signals are in, they're not free. You got to pay for their upkeep and everything, and signals one to last of the design life up there of what the projected traffic is.
Denny, the city of Onalaska has no interest in just taking that highway, I take it.
We have talked with them on that. At this time, they're not agreeable, and we can't force it on them. What I'm banking on is if that project gets built and see how the traffic picks up, if we can get a project in there from Riders Club South back into the city of Onalaska and probably get some federal money and share like we have on this one and get it all reconstructed, then there's probably a better chance that it could be transferred over as we did with County Trunk OS. So, this year on our maintenance, we reconditioned County Trunk G from Highway 33 down to the Vernon County line, and County Trunk V from Highway T over towards Highway Q. I don't know if anybody goes out to eat if they know where the Black Oak Inn is or not, but it's over in that area. That's up in that area up there, and G runs off of 33 down to the Vernon County line. And those projects totaled up to just about 8 miles. So you can figure we got 285 miles of road and we were able to do 8 miles this year, and that was a stretch. So you can see what kind of replacement cycle we have on our county roads out in the rural areas. I've been here 38 plus years, and some of these roads, all we've did is put a few patches down and a few seal coats and we've been able to hold them together that way, but we're running out of time. They're just not going to take the daily increase in traffic and heavier loads. So most of the county roads out in the rural area, the traffic counts have went up at least 20 to 50%. I know on a low volume road, it doesn't take long to make them go up 50%, but those roads weren't constructed to carry that kind of traffic. So they're starting to deteriorate faster than we can repair them. You get down into the urban area, it costs a lot more money to build an urban road than it does a rural road. You got to have your wider lanes, your curb and gutter, your better intersections. So, and seems like the urban areas are stretching out more all the time. You get a developer moving out into an area, isn't long, people are concerned, they want a bypass lane or a turning lane. Up on County Trunk OT, between SN and Highway 35 in the area, the Home and Industrial Park and McDonald's, people are hounding steady, they want signals up there. It's unsafe. But the DOT dictates whether you can put signals in or not. There's warrants that have to be met, and those warrants aren't met, but people are concerned, the traffic's picking up. That's out of maintenance. That's special projects, and that would be moved over to the unfunded area. So right now we're just struggling to do the maintenance. County SN from S down there, it heads north up past Cedar Creek Golf Course up to OT. They project in 2030 that's going to be carrying about 14,000 vehicles a day. So there's going to be some needed improvements there. SN from there up to Holman, very narrow, a lot of traffic. They say by 2030 there'll be about 9,800 cars going up through there, vehicles a day. No shoulders. People want to walk and bike. There's no room for that. So there again, special projects that aren't being funded. County HD in the Holman area there, just north of Highway 35, and it runs up through the, it's called Business 35, in fact, in Holman HD. Traffic increasing there steadily. The road report that we had done shows that there should be some traffic calming devices put in there, reducing lanes and widen out the lanes that's there, but reduce the number of them, put some median barriers in there and things like that to calm the traffic and slow it up some and make it a safer roadway. HD as it goes north out of Holman up past the new school, that's increasing traffic as it goes along, like everything is here. I guess I've touched on a lot of them that are unfunded. We have a lot of intersection improvements that the road study called out, the intersection of B and O, that we come out of by Highway 16 and take B over and O intersects and goes over to Berry Mills. Improvements are called for in that intersection. The M and B intersection just south of West Salem there, that's in need of an intersection improvement. You're talking 400,000, 250,000. HD intersection and DH and D right in Holman, where you turn the corner there, they're talking some improvements of putting the ball bolts to move the traffic over and make it safer for the pedestrians. They recommend that should be a three lane heading east out of Holman up through till you get out of the village. That's all money that's all in the unfunded. So that's it's a dilemma that a lot of people are facing, but the way it's being funded right now, we're struggling to do what we call recondition and repair. So, you know, I'll answer any questions if you have.
Danny, would you touch on some of the real large projects as well, which are in addition to work that you guys would be able to do? This is work you would contract out, because there's some pretty large dollar amounts there in the unfunded.
Okay, County Trunk OA, we do have a project, safety project, about in the middle of that in the S-curves there by Noodleman Road. We secured about $750,000 from the state and feds on a safety project. But that stretch of highway is about 3.25 miles long. So we got some funding to take care of the safety area, but what's that do? You improve that, and that just moves the safety issues to both ends of that project. So you're looking at another $3.5 million to complete that project, and there's no funding for it. You apply and the state keeps moving it back. So if that road was to be fully constructed other than just that safety project, it's not even on the horizon. So, Don?
Did we get a consultant in there to plan the base road already? I understand he's been working in there for like a year or so.
That's right. When we went out there, we wanted to secure the right-of-way corridor, so people didn't encroach in there, and then when you do decide to build, you're buying out new houses and moving things back. So we want to get the corridor secure out there. They're going to fully design the safety project. The rest of it will be designed so the environmental documents can be taken care of, develop a right-of-way plat, so we can work from there. So it's a long way out. County Trunk Highway M, or W, they got it wrong on here. It should be County Trunk W from D up to County Trunk M. It was recommended the shoulders be widened through there and paved 2-foot shoulders and gravel. The road, the highway estimate at that time come up with about $3.5 million. That's way off the horizon. Like I mentioned, the County Trunk HD access management, that traffic calming, that's over $3 million. So it's totals up to about just short of $25 million of unfunded projects that are needed out there. That the money isn't there. It's mainly just maintenance that we're funding right now.
Don Meyer.
I guess Steve O'Malley, the column way on the end is $24,755,000, and that's based on this road study of 2007.
It's combined both the road study as well as Denny and his staff's identification of needs.
So, but inflation could take in here and drive this even up more?
That's right. None of these figures are adjusted for inflation. We've only brought, as the table shows, the 10 years worth of work, which we're averaging 1.7 million a year. We adjusted that for inflation to 2.1. Okay. But again, inflationary costs keep driving the costs up each year. We lucked out this year. Asphalt didn't cost as much as we thought it might with the oil prices up. So we've actually been able to get the work done this year that we were planning to, but you're exactly right. Over a period of time, this work is only going to get more expensive.
And as far as funding from the state, you don't see anything great on the horizon.
Their next program cycle should have been out mid this year, and they're telling us hopefully they'll get it out next spring. Right now they're scrambling to fill their stimulus projects, which county-wise we didn't get any stimulus money. In La Crosse County, the city of Onalaska got a nice project. They got $1.3 million for their Oak Street, and the DOT used some stimulus money on the Monaghan. But those were programmed projects anyway, and what they did is took the stimulus to fund those projects, and the money they had set aside for that went to Madison to fill the debt. So, but
okay. Thank you.
Brad?
I was just going to ask, what would you like to see for a regular maintenance schedule on roads? What would you like to see for a regular maintenance schedule for your road?
If you could cut it in half on 20 years, if you're getting 20 years out of your pavement, I think you're doing a pretty good job. But like I say, we got pavements out there that are 40 years old that had some maintenance work done to them that we're doing right now. But complete rebuilds, I think they should be on a 20-year cycle. But that, the cost of that is astronomical.
Audrey.
Thank you. Denny, this is something you may well be aware of, but there have been several intersections in the city of La Crosse where we were calling for traffic, or people were calling for traffic signals, and DOT said the counts weren't adequate, and we've put in four-way stop signs, and in actual fact, they're probably better than the signalization, because then they can adjust to the traffic. The only problem is sometimes people run them, but they run the red lights too. So,
yeah, anytime you stop them, there's going to be the added increase of rear enders or things like that. And in the city, you're probably running 25, 30 miles an hour, where you get out on these county roads and the speeds are higher than that. So,
yeah, but up in the Holman School area, it may work. Anyway, yeah. Just for what it's worth.
Joe.
Thank you. I have a, I know this is a budget-oriented discussion, however, I have a kind of a policy question, and that is whether your department has any coordination with land information. And the reason I ask is because I see sort of a built-in conflict in the sense that you want to make these as safe as possible and perhaps increase the numbers of cars that are able to go on there, whereas we're getting the message a month ago from land information, we have too many lots and too many people moving out. Is there regular coordination? And I apologize because this is not my bailiwick.
Okay, we coordinate probably not so much on the additions. When there's an addition coming up, they'll contact me and ask what kind of effect it's going to have on a specific road or whatever. I guess there's more traffic out there, but just a general reconstruction of some of these areas, I don't think if you could get just a 12-foot lane with a decent shoulder and things like that, would be a big improvement, but that's even out of the realm of what we can do right now. What we're doing is just rehab. We're reclaiming the pavement in place, using it for base, and putting on a new mat and very little shoulder widening. If you get to a certain point, then there's state mandates. If you can only go so wide of what's originally there, if you get too in-depth into a project, it's called reconstruction, and then you have to meet the state standards all the way through, which would require acquiring right-of-way in many areas, and then it's got to be designed. Right now, most of our roads were laid out 50, 60, 70 years ago. So there's a lot of county highways out there, as there is all over the state of Wisconsin, plus some state highways that don't meet state standards. But once you get into something too far, then you're forced into that. So that's the type of projects we're talking about in the unfunded area. So, but yes, we do work with land conservation, and I think they're well aware of what a development causes out on the rural highways out there. So.
Marilyn?
I realize most of what you do is in-house, but you probably have to hire out for some of the trucking and such. Do you see prevailing wage as being a problem with the budget?
Yes. That,
how much so?
Well, we do all of our own trucking. Square mile-wise, La Crosse County is a small county, but it's a very busy county, and it's got a lot more traffic than a lot of the larger counties around us land-wise. But minimum, the prevailing wage at $25,000, which is going to start the first of the year, there's times when we get into certain types of work. We like to do some work for the townships, and it's good for the towns, it's good for us too, but it's to compete now, it's going to be difficult. But it's I hated to see that drop to $25,000. So
that's a follow-up though. Do you see that as part of as being a difference in this budget by a large amount or not? Because I do know working in the town of Holland, we rely on the county for a lot of stuff, but with the prevailing wage we may not be able to. So that will that affect this?
It depends on, right now, seal coating is still considered maintenance.
Right.
So that's not affected by the prevailing wage. But if it would get into a paving job or something more in depth, and it doesn't take anything to get over the $25,000 limit now. So it will have an effect on how we can compete and try to help the townships out.
Steve?
Denny, could you describe what the prevailing wage, what that issue is? I know Jim and I have talked about it as well. It was a change in the state budget, but maybe not everybody's following exactly what that means.
Well, I think back, this, I think it used to be, what, 168,000 or something? 187,000 before you would trigger the prevailing wage. Any projects, like when we built our highway shop and that, when we bid it out, we made sure that they paid prevailing wage, so after the project was over, they didn't come and to the county and say, well, the contractor didn't pay it, you got an owl. So, but there's a wage set for each activity, a truck driver, a roller operator, a dozer operator, a flagman, anything like that. And they take a survey of the area in La Crosse County, or depends on how many turn in the survey. A lot of them are sent out, but a lot of contractors ignore them. And that's sort of what's hurting us. It's never been done by the counties before, so there is really no history of what under the prevailing wage requirements of what the county pays. So we're based off of what the contractors are paying out there. Some of our employees are pretty close when you figure in their benefits and things, but there are some areas where we'd have to pay some of our operators $2 to $3 more an hour. So that's going to raise the cost of the project, so we're going to be less competitive, I think.
Maureen?
Yes, follow-up question to what Mr. Veenstra asked. It's distressing to hear that there are developments that are with the access roads that have safety problems and shoulders that aren't there, and the roads aren't adequate. Is information about the roads given to the zoning department, and does that factor into the decisions as to whether zoning changes are given or development requests are given? Is, in other words, can the lack of adequate highways be a basis for denying any permits or any growth, or how is that factored in?
I guess Jeff and I talk about it. As far as how their final decision is made, I guess that would be a question for him. I know it's seriously considered and looked at what kind of problems it's going to cause out there. But is it the swaying factor? I guess you'd have to ask somebody from zoning on the final decision on that. So.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you, Denny. Why don't you do the highway portion?
One of the things that I hope, if you did have a chance to review this, and I'm just going to separate the highway portion just for a moment, and I know that some of you at the end of my last presentation came away recognizing that we have quite a few challenges within this budget, and one of the things that struck me about the presentation and what the challenges are that we're left with going into 2011 is that there are still options on what to do. And so I shared this with Chairman Doyle and Tara Johnson, your first vice chair, and Joe Veenstra, your second vice chair, the other day. And I said, there is still some additional option we can look at, but it requires us to actually confront how we're funding roads long term, how we do that this year, and how we do it going into the future. So you did see this slide before, and I just want to point out that in addition to the challenges that Denny just highlighted for you, one of the ways that we've been able to bring you a balanced budget and to make it through doing roughly $2 million worth of work each of the last several years, and it was not without controversy, was that the past 4 years we've actually used part operating levy, not using debt, and part these other funding sources. In 2007, you issued short-term debt of $1,156,000, and you paid for that all in the same year. When we said short-term, it was actually borrowed for less than 6 months. It was about 3 months. We spent, Mary Powell, I think it was under, what, about $30,000 in interest? Do you recall? Less than $30,000 in interest for having that debt for that shorter period of time. It was paid off at the end of the year, but that allowed you to get that $2 million worth of work. Then in 2008, we took up the suggestion of actually Supervisor Spiker, who suggested that we utilize a bit of our fund balance called excess sales tax, which is the amount of reserve that was over and above our projection that we reserve aside for excess sales tax. It actually exceeded what your budget had been for a number of years. You still have that reserve that actually helps pay for economic development, but we applied $1.3 million directly to help do roads in 2008. Then recall last year we spent a great deal of time talking with you about everything from refinancing debt to paying off the highway shop to preparing ourselves to be able to take a deep breath and be able to end up making payments on the new law enforcement center addition. We ended up refinancing debt, which added to your operating levy authority. We did a number of things, but we also then combined with our solid waste department that ended up limiting our landfill liability by reburying all the old garbage into a new lined landfill, and ended up allowing us to access something that we'd been funding through property taxes for quite some time, which was the environmental protection against the old landfill. Just to give you, for those of you that are new to the board, what ended up happening was years ago when the county inherited and ended up getting the old landfill, it had not been environmentally sound. It had the potential for causing additional environmental damage. So this county ended up borrowing about $3.5 million. I don't have the exact numbers, but borrowed that amount and then levied a property tax against everybody to end up paying that debt back and needing to hold that $3.5 million for potential remediation of any environmental damage that could happen. So once our consultant and our staff figured out that they could rebury that garbage, gain more airspace, and eliminate and mitigate the ongoing environmental liability, we would then have access to that money because all of our solid waste department is actually operated from tipping fees, from user fees and that type of thing, with the exception of the old landfill. So you raise property taxes, you use debt to pay for property through property taxes to pay for that remediation.
what we realized in that whole thing was it wasn't solid waste that was paying for it, it was property tax dollars, that if we pay off that debt, that at the end we would have $2 million left in that fund. Again, not related to solid waste because we'd already reburied that garbage. We got permission from the DNR to no longer need that fund available there. We ended up using a letter of credit during the reconstruction because we still stood behind any kind of remediation that was there, and now we don't even need the letter of credit anymore. We have one landfill, it's lined, it's got leachate collection, it's got the state-of-the-art environmental protection, so we no longer need to have that. The residual amount, and the point in this whole discussion is it gave us $2 million then at the end of the whole debt to apply, and I've recommended to you, and we did it in 2009, $1 million for county road projects, paid for by general property taxes, as I said. It's not related directly to the landfill. There was no solid waste fees involved in that. And then in 2010, the budget before you puts that other million also in towards county road projects. Now, the difficult part is, as I shared with you last time, at the end of 2010, you no longer have any of these funding sources. So I've proposed to you and I've suggested to you that in 2011, you're going to have to look at any number of these choices, or maybe you come up with some other ones that I haven't thought of. But in my expertise, what I've been able to identify is that you either need to cut back on county highway capital improvement projects below the $2.1 million because you don't have a funding source like the other four that we utilized. You need to cut other budgets and transfer money to that on that same kind of basis. You would need to use a highway fund balance, which is a possible solution for 1 year, but then again in 2012 you'd need to come up with something else. You could use debt. We've had obviously controversy and discussion about that previously. There are counties that use debt. We've done a statewide survey. It's not the standard practice for counties, but there are four or five counties that have used debt. Both short-term and long-term for county road projects. Obviously, that's a long discussion that you need to have and to have some input. That's a policy choice on your part. Cities and municipalities, it's pretty standard to use debt for road projects because the infrastructure lasts longer than the 1 year that you're spending it, so you're spreading out the cost over a period of time. Other options that there is only one other county that's doing this, which utilizes the vehicle tax. I talked about that last time. Three cities and St. Croix County does that, or to work out special assessment agreements with municipalities. Now, while I haven't found an overwhelming groundswell for any one of those issues up there, the last one probably has taken the least discussion, but I will point out that quite often cities, when they do road systems, do special assessments to the property owners that are actually benefiting. They also then, that's a way that the developers actually end up paying when they end up selling lots, end up actually paying for the road systems that they're impacting. That would be completely unique. That hasn't been something that's been done, but it at least ties back into Supervisor Veenstra's question about how does it tie in directly to the developments that are increasing the impact. The difficult part with that, of course, is it's kind of like raindrops. Which one is the part that really caused something to get wet? After you have a rainstorm, it's clear it's the whole rainstorm. But was it that one development? Was it the next development? Was it the increased traffic from a village or municipality that also added to the developments? It's very difficult to tie back an individual impact. So the special assessment is a more difficult area, other than it's in an individual town or it's adjacent to an individual municipality. As you can see from this list of options, there aren't a lot of easy options there. You just heard your highway commissioner talk about the struggle of just being able to keep up with work. Here's a list of some options that we'll get into. The presentation that I'll spend more time on next Thursday actually ties a number of the challenging issues we've got together. Lakeview and their ongoing funding issues, highway funding. We also, as well as the issue of the rate freeze that we're confronted with potentially next year. In addition to that, the whole concept of that the stimulus dollars that have been provided, we haven't gotten a great deal, but we do have one opportunity. There are stimulus dollars that are provided with very low cost bonding money, the ability to borrow that would be about 2% or less in the cost of interest, and that we've actually developed an alternative that could tie all of these together and actually lower property taxes from the budget that I've actually provided to you. By instead of 5.19%, the total budget would only go up 2.6%. So I'll go through that presentation in more, but I think the most important thing to get across is the legitimacy of the challenge that our highway department has and the limited number of options that we have to keep up with roads. And as Supervisor Meyer pointed out, if we don't start wrestling with these issues today in the 2010 budget, we can pass it off to the next board for the 2011 budget. But I think as I brought you these choices, you will have the ability to affect that yet this year if you choose to amend the administrator's budget. And there are some long-term ways to do this without, in the near term, with using short-term notes, to not have to raise property taxes to do that by using your reserves, and there are a number of ways that I can show to do that. So I've kind of stolen my thunder out of Thursday's presentation, but I wanted to make sure that it's not just about saying, gee, wouldn't debt be a nice way to fund something? It's about trying to accomplish the very complex set of issues that we have to deal with, everything from Lakeview to highway to dealing with the potential negative impact of a rate freeze, as well as how do we start to address the long-term needs that aren't able to be done in the existing budget. And without using some of these sources, you're not going to be able to address the long-term road needs. So that was mainly what I wanted to be able to accomplish tonight before the end of the meeting, Mr. Chair.
Joe Bilskemper, did you have a question?
Yes. Mr. Malley, I assume that sales tax revenues are going to be down, but do we have any, I noticed sales tax, excess sales tax is not on your list for choices. Do we have any cushion there at all?
We have a little bit of a cushion there. I don't, Mary, do you have that exact number? While she's looking for the exact number, yes, that would be one potential short-term solution. Recall that what we've used the sales tax reserve for once was a big dollar amount item. Since then, what we've been using is applying our all of our economic development efforts are paid off a tax levy. They're paid from excess sales tax, which is about $300,000 a year. So we've been trying to not rely on that for an individual project, because at some point you're going to spend that down enough, either because sales tax doesn't come in as high as what we had expected, or eventually you're going to need to move economic development off of that. So the total balance right now at the end of 2009 will be about $2.3 million in that account. We spend it down at the rate of about $333,000, which is the economic development budget. So you could spend a little bit of that potentially for this purpose, but it's going to move up the timeline when you're going to have to deal with that issue of how do you fund economic development activities. The second piece that's also concerning about that, if you look at 1064, which is your non-departmental budget, you'll actually see a sales tax a line item in there. Isn't that where we've got that budgeted? 1064. We budgeted $9.675 million. We're hoping for a slight economic turnaround. This year, we will already be short in 2009. We've budgeted $9.725 million in this calendar year. We're expecting to probably hit about 9.4 or 9.5. So remember, the reason that we have that reserve wasn't for what if for special projects or something else. It's to have that cushion when the economy doesn't sustain you at the level that we're funding property tax relief, because remember that whole $9.7 million just goes right to the property tax bottom line and drops our property taxes. If we don't have that and we hit the mark wrong, say there was a major drop off in sales tax, you'd have to make that up from that reserve or go to general fund. So yes, it is an option. All of these are good policy options, but recognize that you're getting to the point where you've got a lot less to rely on than you did when we did that in 2008. Because, as Supervisor Spiker pointed out, that balance had gotten up there pretty high, so it was a good use. I would not recommend that we go to that unless it was for a very small amount of money, certainly not at the level of $1 million, because you're going to run out of options very quickly to deal with all those other issues. Sorry, that was a long answer, but we will get you these details as we provide you each year.
Steve, special assessments and agreements with municipalities, would that also say slash developers? And if so, how would we define the percentages?
It would be very difficult, and I'm not aware that a county has done that yet in Wisconsin. We would be relying on a municipal revenue sharing agreement with the individual town that we'd be talking about. Developers would not have to agree to anything. This would be a relationship between municipalities, a county and a town.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be complicated. See, counties don't have special assessment authority in this state. They do in other states, but we do not have that authority. Only villages and municipalities and towns do.
Thank you.
Other questions for Steve? Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we talked about doing a lot of renovating and building, and we're looking at Lakeview, we're looking at roads, we're looking at... Well, I don't need an answer tonight, but I'd like you to kind of brief us all on when is it not advantageous to bond anymore, and what effect that bonding level has on the current budget. If we go up $9 million for Lakeview and $300,000 for the floor and a couple of other projects, or the nursing home or the assisted living, when and where is it not advantageous to bond anymore, and what effect is it going to have? So sometime, it don't have to be tonight because everybody wants to watch a football game soon.
Could you, Linda, could you forward that just a few slides that didn't go?
Yeah, I'm going to just take 2 minutes with this, and then we will wrap it up. Best answer to your question is that the judgment call that you as policymakers are going to have to make. And that's what we're trying to bring you,
is that everything from Mississippi Valley Health Services and its relationship with Lakeview, how do we support that through debt that is supported by user fees in working with the other counties, still recognizing that we're 50% of that. The $300,000 or $200,000, whatever number you do with the garage floor, we will recommend that you use that from your general fund and not do long-term debt. The road system, and the reason I went to this slide, is just as I've set a goal before that we want to try to control our long-term levy spending and debt levy within what we've already projected out, even in the plan that I've presented you in the slides that I will go back over on Thursday, my goal would be to control the level of debt payments within your existing resources, fund balance and other reserves, and to not have the absolute debt go above that dollar amount that's there, particularly until we can get to 2015. We also have to be in a position to start to deal with the campus plan, whether you build new or remodel, because anybody that thinks remodeling this building is free is not noticing. Even if you believe this is the right building to be in, that's a policy decision you're going to have to make, it's not that much less than building new, and that was the judgment. It does cost less to remodel, at least the estimate that we've done, but it's not that much less than it is to build new, and that's a debate you're going to have. But there's a, you know, just to conclude, that's exactly the point we need to have the board get to, is what is the dollar amount you can do? Does the alternatives that I've presented you, is that worth doing? Because you can stay within that projected dollar amount, because our first priority right now is just making the debt payments on the law enforcement center and getting us through to the point of the end of 2014 where you're not paying for two law enforcement centers. Because regardless of what happens with equalized value, it's my position that I can't bring you new recommendations that raise that debt amount. You've got to find ways to make those payments, and the short-term debt that I'm talking about in this alternative spreads it out over a period of enough time over the next couple of years that it actually gets you through that without raising debt taxes to make those payments. And I'll show you how that works when we come back Thursday.
All right, we'll continue this discussion next week. Before we adjourn, I wanted to mention one thing. This weekend, I think some of you are aware, some of you may not be aware, up at Vets Park is the Hmong New Year celebration. I encourage people to try to get there. It's a very nice event that they put on every year. Special reason to go this year is that Jerry Huber is their guest of honor. They had an initial event on this past Saturday night that was, I thought, very nice, and I think it's very appropriate that he gets recognized for his contribution to the Hmong community and also the community in general. So if you have a chance on Saturday or Sunday to try to get to the Hmong New Year up at Vets Park, that would, I think, be worth your while. Anybody have any future agenda items or announcements that we need to cover tonight? If not, Jeff Schrader. What time? 10 o'clock at night? Okay, thanks, Jeff. Bob Kyle. Move to adjourn. Second by Jerry Sabanik. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.